Avani Dias with you. Thanks for listening to the Hack Podcast. Back in the day, tats were a thing for bikies, punks, and making your mum cry. Now everyone's getting them.
Every year, more and more people are rushing to get great tattoos and replace their old tattoos that maybe weren't so great when they got them when they were younger.
Today on the show, why DIY tats are becoming more popular, and I'm going to tell you about my own regretful tat. It's pretty embarrassing. Plus, have your parents had a divorce? One school principal reckons people who've gone through bad split-ups will struggle to relate to people later in life. So is that even true?
Hack. If one of the major parties is strongly against nuclear power, then the road ahead is almost impossible.
Triple J.
Heaps of people have been watching the TV show Chernobyl. It's about a massive nuclear reactor accident, and while it's becoming more popular, the show, the Australian government's been floating the idea of bringing nuclear power here. It's one of those issues that comes up every few years, right? But now the federal government's ordered an inquiry into it to see if it could work. And energy is really expensive in Australia at the moment. We're looking for a more environmentally friendly option than coal and gas. So does nuclear power stack up? Let's find out with Joe Lauder.
I don't know about you, but my first thought was, wow, this is a bad time to talk about nuclear.
It's the rather dark HBO miniseries, Chernobyl, which has taken the top spot on IMDb's TV show list.
It's hard to believe that a catastrophe of this scale really happened.
This is a story of one of the world's worst man-made catastrophes.
I digress. So the Energy Minister, Angus Taylor, might not have been watching it because he's ordered an inquiry into nuclear energy in Australia.
It is clear we need access to baseload generation that is low emissions, affordable, and can continue to support industry and ensure that we have affordable power for households and small businesses.
It's going to be a pretty snappy inquiry that'll report back by the end of the year. It's going to look into the issues of nuclear waste, health and safety, environmental impacts, costs and reliability, and community attitudes. But the minister says they're just exploring the issue at this stage.
We have a moratorium on nuclear. There is absolutely no plan to change that moratorium, but over the long term, we need to look at these alternative technologies, and that's why we're doing this.
In terms of having another look at this issue, South Australia held a pretty comprehensive Royal Commission into nuclear energy a couple of years ago, but the last federal inquiry was over a decade ago.
The technology in this area, as with hydrogen and lithium, other baseload sources of power, is changing dramatically at a very fast pace, and we need to understand it.
What he's referring to with this new technology is small modular reactors. It's estimated that getting a traditional nuclear reactor up and running here could take up to 15 years and cost between $5 and $10 billion. But small modular reactors are meant to be a kind of mini reactor that would cost a lot less and be deployed quicker. Ziggy Swartowski conducted the last federal inquiry into nuclear energy, and he chatted to the ABC about it this week.
So these are the sorts of reactors that power nuclear subs, nuclear icebreakers, etc., and towns probably could provide the electricity for a town of about 100,000 people.
But there's one small issue. Although there are lots of different concepts for small modular reactors, they're still in the development phase, and they're probably about a decade away. Meanwhile, the cost of wind and solar is dropping fast.
It was a little bit of a Groundhog Day moment. It was a little bit of the zombie has been reanimated.
This is Dave Sweeney. He's an anti-nuclear campaigner with the Australian Conservation Foundation. And he's heard all this before.
This debate comes around in cycles and comes around in periods. And we have a discussion about whether nuclear power has a role in Australia. We invariably say it's too risky, it's too unpopular, and it's too costly. And move on, but there's people that keep coming back to it and coming back to it.
Dave reckons there are a few major concerns with Australia pursuing nuclear energy.
One is the cost. They're very expensive. Everywhere where nuclear power is being advanced, it is over budget and behind time. We have profound concerns about risk. Accidents don't happen that often, but when they do, they are severe and continuing, like Fukushima.
And of course, the big one is what to do with all the waste that's generated.
You use nuclear rods in a reactor, you get 3 years' worth of electricity, and you have generated 100,000 years' worth of a carcinogenic waste that needs to be isolated from people and the wider planet. No one on Earth has done it effectively and successfully. It is expensive, it is complex, it is unresolved.
Nuclear is waning in developed countries in Europe and the US as old reactors are shut down and countries shift to renewables. It used to account for about 20% of the world's energy mix, and now it's 10%. For example, Germany had 17 reactors in 2011. It now has 7, and in another 3 years' time, it'll have 0. So why the sudden interest in nuclear here?
There's a distraction dimension. We use the term nukespruik to explain those people who dangle the promise and the illusion of nuclear power as an easy energy solution to cover the fact that they have not got a credible and compelling climate and energy solution for the real challenges.
When it comes to the politics, the Labor Party is against nuclear energy in Australia. And Ziggy Switowski told the ABC it's all dead in the water without both parties being on board.
If one of the major parties is strongly against nuclear power, then the road ahead is almost impossible.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J. That was Joe Lauder reporting, and people are split on the text line. Someone says, I work in energy and I know we're too late for nuclear. The costs are so large that it'll cost $200 per megawatt. It simply is not worth it now. Pete from Canberra says, I'm a greenie, but reckon nuclear power is a viable option in the right areas. It should be at least considered with technology of 2019, not fears of the 1980s. All right, let's get into that discussion. Dr. Ben Hurd is the founder of Bright New World. It's an environmental NGO, and he advocates for nuclear power in Australia. Ben, thanks for your time. We have among the highest energy prices in the developed world. Why do you think it's time for nuclear power?
Well, we've spent, you know, worldwide 30 years now trying to tackle climate change, and all we've seen around the world is that energy demand has kept growing, and despite how quickly renewable technologies have grown and how far their price has come down, we are not succeeding. So in Australia right now, every day, we still routinely run about 20,000 megawatts of coal-fired power generation, and we have incredibly emissions-intense electricity. Now, when I was a Triple J listener in high school and really very anti-nuclear at that time, I was told that nuclear power would take too long, so we shouldn't bother. And now, here I am nearly 20 years later, and we are just about still as coal-dependent as we ever were. The only difference is that those coal-fired power stations are now probably too old and they're going to be retired, and we don't have a solid plan for how we're going to replace them and actually bring the whole energy system on a journey of transition towards...
But Ben, let's chat about that transition, because we do know it's expensive. We don't have the infrastructure here right now to have nuclear power. Isn't that a concern, that it will take a long time and cost a lot for us and the taxpayer to actually get this up and running?
Well, it's going to take time, but the transition is going to take time no matter what. So our challenge is actually to do a transition effectively. What we can do is spend another 15 years only using wind and solar power, and where that is probably going to take us is further in the direction we're currently heading, which is where our power system cleans up a very little bit, but it becomes increasingly unstable. The prices become really very volatile. The stability underpinning the system gets worse and worse. And at the end of the day, we actually end up very addicted to fossil gas, which is what we use to back up that wind and solar power.
All right, but aside from fossil gas, what about renewable energies? Because we're moving and transitioning far into that field, which is more sustainable. How long would it actually take to get nuclear power up and running when renewable energy will probably be ready to go by that stage?
Well, renewable energy is already doing a great job in Australia. This is the thing. This isn't about using one or the other. There's still a huge scope for growth in renewable energy, but we are still going to have a huge amount of fossil fuels in the system. We need to be doing both. We can't be suggesting that we're taking climate change seriously when we are committed to only using some solutions. If in the next 15 years we were to develop all of the regulation, all of the infrastructure, start private tendering, and bring on board small modular nuclear reactors in Australia, there will be a role for them to bring us to an affordable decarbonised system, along with more wind and solar, along with more electricity storage.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J. We're chatting to Dr. Ben Hurd. He is an advocate for nuclear power from Bright New World. On the text line, Tyler from Hobart, why aren't we tapping into our crazy high potential for solar power? It's cheap, sustainable, and so much safer than nuclear. Luke from Ocean Grove says, pretty standard for our government to jump onto a dying technology. And another person, small modular nuclear reactors would give Australia a nuclear submarine capability, which would level the playing field for Australia in the Pacific. A lot of different points there. Ben, I want to talk to you about the community reaction to nuclear power. Right now, when most people think about it, they think Chernobyl, a nuclear disaster. They think Fukushima, which happened not even a decade ago. Is there enough community support to make this a viable option?
Well, I've really got to challenge that. I mean, I've been doing this for over 10 years in Australia. I've been speaking with people. I've been doing media. I've been writing articles. That's actually not what most Australians think when you talk to them about nuclear power. Nearly all Australians are aware of those events, but it isn't necessarily the only or the first thing Australians think. Most Australians want some information. They want to be able to have a mature conversation about the nuclear technology that's going to be available in the future, not necessarily harking back to reactors that were designed in Soviet era Russia or 1968, as in the case of the Fukushima nuclear power station. That's not a particularly forward-thinking debate. So in my experience, Australians are actually really, really open to this. No one is really able to say yes or no to something where there's a prohibition on it. And this is, we're really having a very constrained conversation in Australia because we put a ban on one family of technologies for very little compelling reason at all. And there are new technologies coming down the pipeline that could meet so many of our crucial needs as we try to tackle climate change.
But Ben, what about those disasters that we just spoke about? How can we be sure that an accident like that won't happen here in Australia if we were to introduce nuclear power?
Well, we can be sure in the sense that we're sure now that cars have seatbelts. They're so dramatically different than they were in
1960s. Is it the same, though? You know, that they said around 4,000 people could die from the radioactive issues that they've had from Chernobyl in years to come. I mean, it is a big risk, isn't it?
No, it isn't. And this is really an extreme and concerning misunderstanding. The real risk that we're facing in Australia right now is that we burn coal. We burn 20,000 megawatts of it every day. It pollutes the air. That causes genuine health impacts, genuine deaths and illnesses every year in those communities through dirty air. Nuclear power holds all of its waste products. It doesn't even have a chimney. Nothing leaves the plant in that sense. It's been demonstrated to be the safest technology for producing large-scale power in the world. And the only technology that we would be able to use is going to be small modular nuclear reactors, which are inherently safe. That means they've been designed using principles of physics that means they simply cannot run over power. These are some of the core principles underpinning these new technologies.
All right, Dr. Ben Hurd, thank you so much for your insights. You've definitely given us a lot to think about. On the text line, Rob from Byron says, over budget and behind time, just like the NBN. Another person, don't even consider it. So, so stupid. And another texter, a mix of renewable and nuclear for an emission-free future.
This rose. I also did this little equal sign. That was the first one ever. This is the one that you guys like the most. Yeah, this says girl power.
On Triple J.
All right, do you have a tattoo? And did you do it yourself or get a mate to do it? Tattoos are becoming more and more popular. It's to a point that it's an almost $100 million a year industry now in Australia. But with that popularity becomes a lot of regretful ink as well. I'm going to tell you about my horror story in a sec, but first, Tim Swanston went to a tattoo expo to find out what's popular.
So what are you getting today?
I'm getting a Polly Pocket and a Tamagotchi.
Fantastic.
80s kid.
It doesn't matter what your niche is, the tattoo industry has exploded. And there's an artist out there for everyone.
It's nice that people being like, you're not weird, we also like this.
The tattoo industry has grown so much to where it was 20 years ago when it may have had a stigma and it was kind of controlled to a certain culture.
I'm hanging out with Kevin Mack. He's covered in tats and wanted to make an event to showcase artists, body art and educate people about skin health. He's organised the Australian Tattoo Expo. I'm at now in Brisbane.
Every year, more and more people are rushing to get great tattoos and replace their old tattoos that maybe weren't so great when they got them when they were younger.
Love them or hate them, tattoos are on the rise. At least, that's according to the industry, who say consumer spending grows by about 4% a year, now just shy of $100 million. The industry says if you look around you on the street, somewhere between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 people will be inked. So, what's hot? Well, for those who want to celebrate a bit of Australiana, there's heaps more options for you. Drea Darling inks people up with native birds and plants.
People seem to really resonate with it because, you know, it's stuff they see all around them.
So a lot of people like to get it, you know, as a way of having a bit of Australian pride. You know, the Southern Cross is not really a thing anymore.
And Kevin says other styles are getting a lot of love.
There was a big rise in realism tattooing, and there's just some just amazing realistic tattooers out there, especially in Australia. But there's a big demand now for hand-poke tattoo, which obviously is goes back to the origins of tattoos.
Yeah, hand-poke tattoo seems to be getting really big again. The kind of tattooing that uses repeated poking motions to deposit ink under the skin. It's done at parlours or tattoo studios, but also really often at home.
Every second party I was going to, I was seeing people doing the dodgiest, most horrifying methods to tattoo each other. Things like using pen ink and sewing needles.
That's Lauren. She runs an online business, Poke Tattoo Packs, that sells DIY gear. She set up shop because people were saying they didn't know where to get proper equipment and she was concerned about safety. But she's made some people in the industry pretty mad.
We have been sent a fair bit of hate online, mainly from traditional machine tattoo artists who don't like what we do. But I think what they don't realise is that we really do have the same goal ultimately, and that's allowing people to express themselves through such a beautiful art form.
20 years ago, if you told someone that you did hand-poked tattooing at home, you would be shunned by the industry.
That's Mimsy Gleason. She's been tattooing in Brisbane for more than two decades. She says the tattooing scene has developed so much recently, with much of that because of Instagram and Facebook. But she's really noticed those lower barriers of entry to get into the industry.
Nowadays, with the internet and social media, you can learn to tattoo on YouTube. There's probably stick and poke guys posting videos on how to do that. So it's open to everyone now.
On Triple J.
Tim Swanston with that story. And give me a call. Have you DIY tattooed yourself or a mate? Did it end badly? 1-300-055-36. We've got Grace on the line. Grace, what was your experience?
Hi. I actually got my first stick and poke tattoo last year in November.
Did you do it yourself?
No, I actually had a friend do it, which was a really nice experience because I felt really comfortable with her. And since then, I've probably got about, like, 15 to 20.
Whoa. That's a big commitment.
Little.
Are you ever worried about the safety issues around it?
No, it's all, like, it's all done really clean. And, like, I've also been to her studio and that sort of thing. Since then, I've started doing them myself, like, on myself as well, and never had any issues. So.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for the call, Grace. Let's chat about any of those safety issues with Sean Bones. He's a tattoo artist on the Gold Coast. Sean, we just heard Grace's story. A lot of people are getting into DIY tats. What should people be mindful of?
They should be definitely mindful of the health side of things. You know, these people claim to know that they have no issues or no side effects, but how do you actually know until you go and get a blood test or to see a doctor about it? Like, hepatitis is a huge thing, and, you know, being in a home is not a medical environment as opposed to an actual tattoo studio.
What are the safety things that people should be aware of? Should they just not do this at all? What's your advice?
You should definitely 100% steer away from being tattooed at home. You know, there's being in a tattoo studio and having that cleanliness and having people that actually have the experience and the know-how of setting up a medical area. Like, every artist in the Gold Coast has to have an infection control certificate, otherwise you're not allowed to practice.
Yeah, right. And it's actually illegal to get a tattoo from someone who doesn't have a license in some states, right? There is a trend, as we just heard, more and more Aussies are getting tattoos, and that used to be pretty exclusive to bikies or punks and whatever. Why do you think there's such a growing trend now?
I guess, like, you really see, like, a huge uprise in the last maybe 10 to 12 years, especially from, you know, celebrities and, you know, sporting people getting tattoos. People idolise those people. They want to be, you know, involved. They want to feel as a part of, you know, the society as they are as well. So, you know, more and more people are getting it. It's more acceptable. It just continues to grow.
We're chatting to Sean Bones, a tattoo artist on the Gold Coast, about the increase in people getting tats. Someone's texted in, my partner's a tattooist. She tattoos people from home and she tattoos herself out of boredom often. My ex has also done home jobs. They are awful and never turned out well. Sean Bones, you're a legend. Would love to have you do my next one or 10, says someone on the text line. Got a fan there. And another person, I've got a home job tattoo and I haven't told my boyfriend yet. I'm really scared for him to know. Now, Sean, with this increase in tattoos comes the regret. I've got my own regret. When I was 18, me and a friend got a tattoo of Charlie Chaplin on a skateboard. It was just a dumb, spontaneous decision. Turns out Charlie Chaplin has been grooming young women when he was younger and, you know, has a really patchy past. So I'm thinking, should I get this removed? What do you think, Sean? Do you think that removal is the best way to go if you regret a tattoo?
It's definitely an avenue that is, you know, easily accessible now. Like, laser has become, you know, increasingly popular and it actually has become better over time. I've had laser done myself and it, you know, I've had...
Really? What did you get it done on? What did you remove?
I had a couple of, like, little skulls with, like, a mandala under it, like, on the side next to my ear.
Yeah, right.
I didn't regret them. I didn't hate them. I just sort of grew out of it. And luckily enough, you know, laser is available and I got rid of them.
All right. Well, let's get into the regret. Can we get the person with the most embarrassing tattoo ever? Give me a call. 1-300-055-536. Tommy says on the text line, tats are for wankers, in my opinion. Fair enough, Tommy. What do you think are some of the worst tattoos you've been asked to give, Sean?
Oh, look, I've had a fair share of my time. You know, I've had a couple of, you know, young kids come in a little bit, you know, intoxicated through, like, when I was in a street shop. They wanted to get the shaka sign on their lower back. I had a lady one time ask for an upside down elephant on her sternum.
Oh,
so
yeah.
the trunk would have been facing up.
Okay.
You could only imagine what that might have particularly looked like in the future. Just the classics, you know, partners' names, you know, just really bad, awful things.
Yeah, a few good ones coming in. Someone says, I lost at beer pong and now have a pickle Rick on my ankle from my friend. It's not the greatest, but it reminds me of my greatest friend. That's nice. I think if it reminds you of a memory, then that's good. Michael from Melbourne says, transform it into Charlie Chaplin skating into jail. That's a good idea, Sean. Maybe I can get you to do that. Jazz is on the line. What is your bad tattoo?
My bad tattoo is homesick written on my knuckles in big, bold, gothic writing.
Oh, why did you get that?
I was 18 years old and I thought it was like the coolest thing ever because I was going through a really hard time. So, yeah, it's definitely really different, but kind of can't really cover it up because it's very visible.
Yeah, especially with the gothic font. Do you think you'll get it removed?
Honestly, probably not because I have a lot of tattoos. Like, I've got two sleeves in my leg and one up my side as well. I would like to get them removed, but they don't bother me too much, so it's not that bad.
What do people say when they see it? Do they ever ask you about it?
They ask me where I'm from and why am I homesick.
Oh, that's so funny. Fair enough. Thanks for the call, Jazz. Adrian from Gladstone's also on the line. What's your brother's tattoo?
Triple J drum.
Whoa, that's such a good commitment. So he obviously really loves Triple J.
Oh, he loves it, yeah. He wears it proud.
Really? Does he regret it at all? Is he very happy with it? I'm sure he's very happy with it.
No, he's very happy with it.
Oh, that's so good. Thanks for the call, Adrian. Sean, what is the process around getting tats removed? It's quite expensive and a long process, right?
It can be definitely quite expensive depending on the size of the tattoo. The process, you mean just you have to go into a place nearby that is a reputable shop. There's quite a few on the Gold Coast. They'll tell you exactly how long and, you know, how much it's going to take, but you need to wait about 2 months in between sessions. So I think it took me about a year and a bit to fully remove mine.
Yeah, right. It's a totally big process. Sounds like a much bigger commitment than actually getting the tattoo in the first place. Sean Bones, tattoo artist from the Gold Coast, and a bunch of regretful tattoos coming in. Someone says, my mate had a home job simply saying VB. That's Nick from Mona. Another person, I know a guy once who had a huge Yosemite Sam on his upper inner thigh. It was high school days, like 20 years ago. So you can imagine how awful the quality was and what it looks like now. And someone else says, Pickle Rick is awesome. Shout out to the person that got Pickle Rick. Pickle Rick is cool. Fair enough.
The head of one of Sydney's top private schools has warned that denying children access to their fathers when the parents' relationships break down can be disastrous.
Are your parents divorced or did they fight often? Well, a school principal is making headlines with a pretty stark warning that it'll lead young women to seek, quote, inappropriate contact with men. And for young men, it'll lead to them rejecting their mums. Pretty wide sweeping statements, right? The principal of Sydney School, private school, St Andrew's Cathedral, sent a newsletter to parents warning them of these so-called ramifications. I want to know what you think about this. Have you had a family breakdown? Did you struggle to relate to men or your mum? Call me, 1300 055 536. Elizabeth Shaw is from Relationships Australia. She's here to tell us if there's any legitimacy to this. Elizabeth, so many people go through family breakdowns. Is this claim that young women struggle to relate to men later in life if they've been apart from their father through a divorce, is that true?
Look, I don't think there's a lot of evidence, and it's too simplistic a claim. There's so many different factors in a divorce, and the greatest one really is about the level of acrimony and conflict and why people were kept apart from each other. Maybe it wasn't safe to be together. Maybe it was a good decision. And maybe it was a very poor decision on the parents' part. So there's just so many factors involved.
This principal's claims, it's making headlines. Do you think it's dangerous to be sort of proposing that those repercussions could happen to young people?
Look, I think some of those sort of gendered ideas don't carry a lot of weight, and as I say, are pretty simplistic and very heteronormative about, you know, women and men seeking each other out in these different ways. I think it's all about the quality of the relationship and the trauma of the family breakdown, because it is a trauma for a lot of people, and the way the parents fight and the acrimony, as I say, that's the kind of thing that leaves a long-lasting effect.
Kate from Brisbane's texted in, my parents split when I was four after being married for 15 years. Despite not having a steady model of a family to look up to, I've been with my partner for several years. That principle is full of shit. What about the claim about young men, Elizabeth, that they struggle to relate with their mothers if they've gone through a really nasty divorce?
Well, look, again, I think it's, you know, if a family's grown up with these kind of gendered splits, then after a breakup, it's only going to exacerbate. But the bigger thing is the level of the quality. Did both parents make a big effort to stay close to their kids? Did both parents make an effort to shield their kids from the trouble? Or did both parents pay out on each other and try and draw their kids into the conflict?
All right. You know, we do have Hannah on the line, and I want to go to her quickly. Sorry to interrupt you, Elizabeth. No, Hannah, what was your experience?
Well, my mum always wanted me to have a relationship with my dad, even from his past and how he treated her. It only came up until probably when I was 18, I decided I didn't want a relationship with him. But it made me feel like I was always being scared of getting rejected.
Yeah, so do you struggle to relate to men now?
Yeah, I have a boyfriend at the moment, but I am quite reluctant, and I don't really have sympathy for, like, we can't empathise because I have, like, problems with that.
Yeah, fair enough. But thanks for calling in, Hannah. Really appreciate it. Elizabeth, just before we let you go, how should young people stay resilient and deal with nasty family breakdowns if that's what they're going through?
Look, this is really, really tough to do, but I think being able to say really clearly, I don't want to be drawn into this. This is trouble between you. I don't want to be part of it. If in various ways you're able to convey that, at least it's some kind of boundary, and your parents may or may not be able to listen to it, but I think you feel entitled.
All right.
to say this is not my problem.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth Shaw from Relationships Australia on the text line. My parents split in my 20s. It was hard enough. I can't imagine that as a young kid.
Hack on Triple J.
Got so many texts tonight on nuclear power. People are pretty split. Someone says, take climate change and cost out of the picture for a moment. What are we meant to do with all the building up waste over the next 50 to 100 years with nuclear power? That's an interesting point. We got so many regretful tats. Some of the best ones. Someone says, I have sucking on my titties tattooed under my boob. And another person, my little brother has a tattoo of a stick man taking a piss on his butt cheek. Pretty great stuff. Thanks for listening to the Hack Podcast. I'll catch you later.